Hi, this is Jerome Taylor, photojournalist and Southeast Asia correspondent for Agence France-Presse, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Cheers.
It's September 4th, 2016 as I release this episode, and there's just a couple of days left in our awesome Think Tank Photo Camera Bag Giveaway. Don't forget to hit the show notes for episode 104 at petapixel.com/podcast, where we'll have the link to the giveaway. You want to take just a few seconds that it literally takes to enter this thing. All you have to do is post a comment over there with your favorite episode number and why, and you're entered. It's that simple. Now, if you're selected, you'll have your choice of one of three awesome bags from Think Tank Photo. And you guys know how much I love their stuff because I talk about it all the time here. I own a lot of their gear, and they've never, ever failed me. It's nearly $1,000 in bags that we're giving away to celebrate topping 100 episodes here on the show. And just like the lottery, you can't win if you don't play. So, you know, maybe hit the pause button right now, go over there and enter, and then come on back here. I want you guys to win a bag, you know? Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 104. A surefire way to make grandma happy. In this episode, how I unexpectedly did some good with my photography, Tamron updates a beast of a lens, a free college photography course is available, Yongnuo has a cheap 35 for Nikon, Snapseed edits RAW files on iOS now, and a new Instagram feature underwhelms. All that and more in episode 104 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Jerome, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. I have a quote from Jerome later on in this episode, so I thought, what better time than now to highlight this superb photojournalist? Based in Bangkok, Thailand for French press agency AFP, in fact, that's what AFP basically stands for, Jerome is their go-to guy in all of Southeast Asia. He's previously been based in Hong Kong, London, and India. His photographs are outstanding, but equally as important, Jerome can write. And as a photojournalist here in 2016, if you can write as well as shoot, you're that much more valuable and employable these days. If you'd like to follow along with Jerome's travels as he covers that part of the world, hit the link in the show notes as usual, or find him on Instagram where he's Jerome Mark Taylor. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 104 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you hitting that subscribe button to make sure you get every single episode of this podcast, as well as telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. This past Wednesday, my daughter cheered at her first football game. She's the one that you hear at the end of each episode, and she's going to be 13 in just a couple of months now. We had no idea she even wanted to be a cheerleader until her friends did, and of course, then it suddenly became important to her. You know how that goes. So I did what we photographer dads do, and I shot photos and video of her cheering at one of her junior high school's football games when I was reminded of a few things that I had forgotten along the way. For one, it's important to just be a dad sometimes and put down the darn camera. You know, not for her sake, but for mine. She's all too happy to cheer, have dad shoot some photos and video, and then just move along without having a giant lens aimed at her the entire time. You know what I'm saying? And for dad, that's me, remember, it's important to take it all in. This was her first time cheering ever, you know, her debut. And there's only one first time cheering. And I wanted to make sure that I remember exactly how she cheered and the pride that I felt, not the photos that I shot. You know, you want to remember the event, not the photos. A lot of times we remember what the photos show us, not what we actually felt and saw that day. And I was reminded of this not too long after shooting those photos and video of she and her friends, as I took my position on the sidelines getting ready to shoot the game, because, you know, I had to be there anyhow, right? When I looked over to my left and I saw a grandmother in her early 60s or so who was there to shoot photos of her grandson playing football. Now there I am with my Nikon D500 in grip, mounted to the beastly Sigma 120-300mm f2.8, atop a monopod, and all decked out with whatever gear I thought I might need, and I did what I've done 100 times or so in that circumstance. I leaned over to her and I said, "Hey, want to trade?" You know, it's an instant icebreaker. She laughed and she said, "Yeah, but I'm not sure you'd want to." I asked her which one was her grandson. She told me, and she said it was his first junior high football game and how proud she was of him for working so hard and playing. Well, you know, I thought about it for a second and I told her, sit it out this time because I've got it. You know, I'm there to shoot anyhow. I'll get a lot of great shots of him for her. And I wanted her to enjoy his first game because there's only one first game, remember? She was so excited. I wish you could all see the joy on her face. I mean, she was ecstatic about this. I told her I'd upload the photos later, and so she handed me her business card. It had her email address on it, and she went and took her seat and enjoyed the game. So I emailed her later that night telling her I went through the photos, and I'd finished getting them all together in the morning and then send them over to her, and here was her reply. She said, quote, I actually got to enjoy the first sporting event in years. It was a unique experience. I was behind a camera with my own kids for years, too. Guess I just never thought of it before now. Thank you. End quote. You know, to me, stuff like that is priceless. And when I was a photojournalist, I would often do that as well. You know, people should be enjoying these things. They don't necessarily need to be shooting pictures unless they really, really enjoy that. These moments are there and gone. And sure, the photos help you remember them. But like I said, being in the moment and remembering what it feels like later is way better, I think. You know, I'm there killing time shooting a game because I have to be there anyhow because I have to take my daughter home. And I'm shooting photos to share on social media, which is LensShark everywhere, by the way. But the game didn't mean anything to me aside from that. You know, it was just a game. But to her, it was her grandson's first football game. And that's something that should be enjoyed. You know, maybe take a few photos here and there, but put the camera down and enjoy the first game. Shoot the heck out of the second game, maybe, but enjoy the first one, I say. Okay, so here's a photo project for all of you out there who want to shoot something and do some good too. You know, a lot of you ask me what I should shoot, and my photos don't have meaning. What can I do? So here's what you can do there. Call your local junior high school and find out when the next game is. Not high school. You know, everyone is shooting the high school games. Those things are so overcovered, and they're also harder to get sideline access to. But a junior high game, not a problem. You pretty much just show up and shoot from the sidelines. That's it. So I say shoot a junior high game or two. You know, there's going to be some parents on the sidelines that are shooting as well. Tell them that you're paying it forward. Offer to shoot the game for them so they can enjoy it. They can sit down, relax, and watch their kid play. Get their contact info, and then watch how happy you make them. Photographers these days get such a bad rap. So here's an opportunity to make people happy and do a little bit of good to change that. I mean, if we all did a little bit of good as photographers and used our skills to make people happy, we really could not change the world, but help change perceptions of photographers, right? Also, there's nothing to say that you can't shoot the heck out of a game, put the photos online somewhere, then have the parents and coaches tell everyone else about them, and ask for donations. You know, this isn't about selling photos. It's about making people happy. But some of those people are going to want to know how they can give back to you as a way of showing their thanks. You know, think of it as a tip jar. They're under no obligation to give you any money, but I think some are going to. And you know, you can put that towards gear or whatever, right? You know, that grandmother loved the photos, and maybe she'll feel less of a need to take photos or take so many photos for future games. She'll enjoy those games, take a little bit of photos here and there, but enjoy her grandson playing that game instead of taking photos of him playing that game. Being in the moment is so important. When I was a photojournalist, I was part of so many really cool things, but I really didn't experience them. I was photographing them. It's like watching them on TV. It really is. And you know what? While you're out there shooting a game or whatever you're shooting, maybe get some photos of grandma too. I think it's really important to document that she was there and get some of her family as well. You know, especially to that young athlete, he's not going to have her forever, right? And that's something that they're going to cherish. Next. Despite this technology being in our smartphones since pretty much the beginning, you can now pinch and zoom photos in Instagram, thus seeing them pixelated in pretty darn low resolution. Why? Just why? Next. I would hope by now that most people have learned that you don't actually need to buy the lenses that your camera maker of choice sells. So if you shoot Canon, you don't have to buy Canon glass. You just don't. Third-party lens makers have been around for decades now, and frankly, they were horrible for many of those years. Then Sigma got good, really good actually. Tamron's making incredible lenses now, and even Tokina is starting to make a solid effort. I'm not a big Tokina fan, as you can tell, but they're actually putting out some pretty decent lenses these days. There's also a number of smaller lens companies, of course, and then there's Young Nuo, known for making really awesome clones, I guess we'd call them, of those fancy Canon and Nikon flashes that cost a lot of money, but for a fraction of the price, and most, if not all, of the quality. The company has for a while now branched out into lenses. Many people enjoy their 50mm f1.8 lenses, and now you can get their 35mm f2 in Nikon f-mount for roughly $95 US, a little more than half of the cost of Nikon's awesome 35mm f1.8. Aside from the obvious, the difference in the maximum aperture there, here's how the two compare. The Young Nuo has 7 elements in 5 groups to the Nikon's 8 in 6. It can stop down to a minimum aperture of f19 rather than f22 with the Nikon. It has a minimum focusing distance of 0.25 meters versus 0.3, a maximum magnification ratio of 0.23x rather than 0.16 with the Nikon, and a larger 58mm filter thread size versus 52mm. As with the Nikon, of course, and Young Nuo's 50 for Nikon, their 35mm f2 is indeed an autofocus lens. Now, whether or not it's as fast and accurate as the Nikon remains to be seen, but once they're out there and people are testing them, that'll all be shaken out. So if you're in the market for an inexpensive 35, hit the show notes for episode 104, and we'll link you over to where you can find one. Next. I think many of us remember when the Canon 5D Mark II came out and photographers complained about it being able to shoot video because, you know, they thought that was a consumer feature because it's been in little tiny point and shoot digital cameras for many, many years. And somehow they were being forced to use it, and they weren't, and they still aren't. But like insurance, it's there if you need it, right? And I think the same thing goes for raw editing being possible on iOS devices. It's one of those things that people swear they'll never use until they have a need to do so, of course. And that goes for pretty much just about everything on a camera. So now that it's possible to shoot photos on your real camera, and yes, I'm doing air quotes here, and transfer them to your phone, your tablet, etc., presumably for being posted on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and the like, being able to edit a RAW file just makes sense, I think. I mean, why not? If you've got the time and you want more latitude than with a JPEG or a PNG file on your phone, it'd be nice to see what you can do with the RAW files, I think. Now, you're not going to do this to all of your photos, mind you. I mean, I don't know about you, but my iPhone 6 Plus is constantly in a state of being full. So unless we have terabyte drives in our devices, which we eventually will, of course, this is something that you're only going to be using on select images. You know, the best of the take. We saw Snapseed bring RAW editing via its app to the Android platform nearly a full year ago in October of 2015, and now it's in version 2.9 of their popular app for iOS. And it's a really great app, by the way. If you're shooting pics on your phone, forget about transferring things to your phone. If you're shooting pics on your phone and you don't have Snapseed, you're really missing out on a powerful, fun tool. Currently, you can manipulate the RAW files of 144 different models of cameras in Snapseed, and there's going to be more coming, of course, in future updates in the App Store. You import a RAW photo, Snapseed detects it, and you're able to use tools such as healing, brushes, frames, text, HDR, and details to make your image look its best. Well, the best that you can make it look, I guess, while messing with it on your phone or tablet at least. As on a desktop, changes are made non-destructively, so that is awesome. And you can export your photos as high-quality JPEGs, with you being able to set the preferred JPEG compression rate, export lossless PNGs, and a new face tool comes in version 2.9, allowing users to smooth skin, add clarity to the eyes, etc. Snapseed suggests that the best way of getting those RAW files onto your iOS device is with one of Apple's USB card readers, and that's about $29 or so, or a Wi-Fi SD card. Now, as for its usefulness in real-world applications, photojournalist for AFP Jerome Taylor, who you heard open this show, said of this quote, "This could be great. On breaking news, when I don't have the big cameras with me, I have sometimes filed using my Sony RX100 Mark IV, sending frames wirelessly to my phone. The big downside until now has been you could only send JPEGs to the phone, and they're massively compressed. With an SD to Lightning, the idea of being able to send higher quality JPEGs from RAW with all the processing advantages RAW has is very attractive, end quote. Now, he's talking about filing his photos from the field, you know, sending them off to his editors at AFP and giving them higher quality JPEGs since he's imported that RAW file into his iPhone or his iPad, etc. If this all sounds really cool to you, and I think it is, remember, you're only going to do this on one or two photos here and there. You're not going to import all of them. You can get the latest version of Snapseed right now for free in the iTunes App Store as well as on Google Play, if you have an Android device, of course. Next. We talked earlier about third-party lens makers creating great glass, and one lens that's nearly universally loved is Tamron's SP 150-600mm f5-6.3 DI VC USD, a behemoth of a lens that is extremely popular with wildlife photographers and some sports shooters as well. This lens is very sharp, the build quality is outstanding, and for about $999 US, which sounds a lot better than $1,000, of course, is actually a pretty good value. Well, it's been about 2.5 years since that lens came out, I believe, and now Tamron is dropping the G2 version on us. G2 for Generation 2. The company says it was time to update this great lens due to all the DSLRs that are out there now with crazy high megapixel counts, such as Canon's 50 megapixel 5DS and 5DSR. In fact, we've seen the megapixel wars get a little cray-cray the last few years or so, and much of the lenses that are out there can't even resolve the super high resolution bodies that have been thrust upon us. That's why you're seeing a lot of lens refreshes, and that's just going to keep on continuing until the entire lineup is updated. It also gives these companies a reason to have something new for you to buy, right? And you know what? If your camera does 50, but your lens only does 20, and we're talking megapixels here, that's a problem. So aside from the great improvement in optical quality, Tamron has managed to get the minimum focusing distance down to 86.6 inches, that's 2.2 meters, from the 106.3 inches or 2.7 meters that it was before. And you know what? That is pretty astounding. That is nearly a full 20 inches. I mean, we're talking almost 2 feet of improvement right there. With the G2 version of this lens, your subject could be 20 inches closer to you and be in focus. And that might not sound like a lot, but when you're working in a fairly limited amount of space with that ginormous lens, those 20 inches are suddenly helpful. It has a 1 to 3.9 max magnification ratio. Autofocus is said to be faster. It has 4.5 stops of vibration compensation, also known as VC. 3 different modes for that VC. And a feature that I think many are going to think is a throwaway, but will actually be a massive help, and that's their new Flex Zoom Lock System, which will allow you to lock your zoom at wherever you have it. That is a very nice touch, and I think it's something that many lenses of this size could definitely benefit from. Now, in addition to this updated beast are 2 new teleconverters, 1.4 and 2X models, which each are moisture and dust proof and are made to be durable just like the lens I just told you about. And what's great is they'll continue to allow attached Tamron lenses to pass the AF data as well as keep the stabilization in effect. That is really nice. That's not always possible with other teleconverters. Now, if you've been listening to this show for a while, you know I am not a huge teleconverter fan, but it's going to be interesting to see just how these perform. You know, with the way these things are designed these days and manufacturing being as good as it is, I don't see why the reduction in image quality could be fairly minimal. And if that's true, that might make it worth the asking price for these. The new Tamron 150 to 600mm G2 will be available here in the US sometime shortly after the launch date in Japan on September 23rd, 2016, and will go for $1,399 US. That's a full $400 more than what the current model goes for, which of course is going to go down in price once this comes out. So maybe you might want to look at that model and compare it to this one and the cost savings, because they're going to be quite dramatic. Kind of like my daughter. Sorry. If the G2 model of this lens is as great as it looks like it could be, wildlife photographers will drop the coin to get one. They rave about this lens. It's important to remember that the difference between the dollar and the yen has caused camera companies, lens makers, etc., most of whom are in Japan, by the way, to raise prices. So it's really not too surprising that this is coming in $400 more expensive. As with the G1 model, it'll be available in Canon EF, Nikon F, and Sony A mounts. A, not E. You know, it'd be nice to see an E mount version. That's what people are buying these days. They're not buying Sony A mount cameras anymore. But I guess Tamron doesn't smell what I do, and that's the A mount system dying a very, very slow death. I've given it zombie status since last October 2015, but you know what? It sure looks dead, doesn't it? Right? I mean, come on, tell me otherwise. The 1.4x Tele will go for $419. That is a lot of money, of course, with the 2x going for $439, but they're only available for Canon and Nikon mounts. This lens looks pretty darn sweet. I mean, the first one was great. This one looks even better. Do you hear me, Tamron? Get this bad boy in my hands before the end of the football season because I want to see what this puppy can do. Ruff. Wait, that's wrong. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Next. The internets. That's right. The internets has been such an incredible resource for photographers. You know, if you think about it, between it and your LCD screen, you have two amazing tools to help you become a better photographer. Schools like Brooks Institute have dropped like flies, and you could make the case that you don't need a degree in photography. You don't. To become a photographer, and everything you need is really at your fingertips these days. Between taking a photo and getting instant feedback on that LCD, or maybe in the electronic viewfinder of mirrorless cameras, and making the adjustments you need from there, to being able to find whatever you need online, you could really cut the learning curve greatly. I mean, we're talking you could take years off of the learning portion. I mean, you're always going to be learning when it comes to photography, but you'll get there a lot quicker and start enjoying it way sooner. And part of that includes a wealth of free tutorials and outright completely free college courses that are available online. And one of those is an excellent course taught by former Stanford professor and current Google engineer Mark Lavoie, who has made the materials for his CS178 digital photography class available on his website. It's an 11-week course which you can jump into without even knowing a darn thing about photography, and according to Lavoie is, quote, an introduction to the scientific, artistic, and computing aspects of digital photography. Topics include lenses and optics, light and sensors, optical effects in nature, perspective and depth of field, sampling and noise, the camera as a computing platform, image processing and editing, and computational photography. We will also survey the history of photography, look at the work of famous photographers, and talk about composing strong photographs, end quote. On his site are 18 lectures starting with image formation on week one, on through to the last of a five-part installment on the history of photography, and along the way, you'll not only learn those things, but a whole lot more. There's videos of each lecture that he taught at Google's campus, and if you've got a few minutes and you think you might want to learn photography in this way, I think it might be worth a look to see if it's for you. You know, not everyone learns in the same way, of course. You know, some people can watch a lecture and pick it up, and others prefer to do it on their own, make their own mistakes along the way, and any number of other ways of actually learning. And those who prefer lectures may not like a particular instructor's style and just never connect with what they're saying. I mean, everyone has a style, right? There are tons of photography podcasts out there, but presumably you enjoy the way I present the material here on this one. So if I had a photography course, a workshop, etc., it's not too crazy to think that it might be something that you'd enjoy, right? I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Anyhow, if you could use some photography education and free sounds like a great price to you, head on over to the show notes for episode 104 at petapixel.com/podcast, and we'll link you on over to that. I've watched a bunch of it so far, and I tell you, for me personally, I learned a lot of things. There's always something to learn in photography. That's what's awesome about it. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 104 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I hope you do, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. And now that I'm out there shooting with my Nikon D500 and having a great time, those are the places where you're going to be able to see my photos. Also, don't forget, if you want to get in on that Think Tank Photo Camera Bag giveaway, we're giving away 3 bags totaling almost $1,000. Head on over to our show notes. I'll link you over to that. All you got to do is tell me what your favorite episode is and why, and you're entered. It's that simple. So get in on that. And future people listening to this, don't worry. We're going to have more giveaways throughout the year, so you're covered. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 105. Well, it's F8 and 250 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
We saw Snapseed bring raw editing via its app to the Android platform. Gotta have bloopers.